You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We get a chance to talk a little more football with a man you know and love. You see him on the NFL Network. He is now with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is Michael Silver. Michael, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys holding up?
We're doing well. We're all in our homes doing the show from home, so working with a bit of a delay and everything. But, you know, it's paradise compared to what a lot of people are dealing with right now. So we appreciate you taking time to talk a little football with us, create a diversion for everybody out there. And as we talk about the free agency that's going on, is there one big surprise to you so far, whether it's somebody – that signed for a dollar amount you didn't expect, somebody that remains unsigned? What's been the biggest surprise so far for you?
Well, I think the Hopkins trade, you know, got things rolling in a surprising way. When I heard the first part of that trade, which was that the Cardinals were dumping David Johnson and his full salary to the Texans, I was kind of, you know, taken by that was a great deal for the Cardinals, who clearly didn't have Johnson and their plans. A lot of people think that he's no longer, you know, the runner he was, and the contract was rough for them. And then to get Hopkins and only give up a two, it was pretty, you know, pretty shocking. And then later you saw the Stephon Diggs deal to Buffalo with a much higher price tag. So that's the thing I think people are going to still be sorting out, you know, as we go into the draft and potentially into the season, depending on how things go in the next few months.
Did we lose Dave? Might have lost Dave. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Mike, I know you have a good relationship with Marshawn Lynch, and we all know how he came back to the Seahawks last year. There's some talk with the running back situation, injuries to Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, that maybe Marshawn would be an option again this year. How open is he to something like that?
I believe he's open to it, and I believe the Seahawks are open to it. And so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, there's still some backs out there on the market, like Devontae Freeman, that I think could be pretty interesting from the Seahawks' perspective. You've got a draft to come, and John Schneider trying to stockpile some picks, so they could end up drafting one. And then obviously they're super high on Carson and you know, spent a reasonably high pick on Penny. So all that's kind of out there, but you know, it's not just that Marshawn was, you know, important for them in that stretch run and was able to get the ball across the goal line and give them a little juice when they needed it. In terms of how the vibe was, it was tremendous. And this is a guy who, you know, went a long time without speaking to Pete Carroll and John Schneider at one point during his earlier Seahawks tenure, who clearly wanted out. And he was a completely different guy when he was there, just super appreciative of the organization and you know, the atmosphere and they, you know, I know the powers that be felt similarly. So I think everybody's kind of feeling good about it, certainly open to it. And it's not something I think even under normal times you'd want to do before training camp or during training camp. You know, I think we're talking after training camp and maybe after that. But it's something that I definitely think is a possibility.
You there, Dave? All right. I thought Dave was back. Apparently, he's still not back.
I think Wyman is boycotting me because of my alma mater, which is, you know, that's fine because for the first time in a long time, I can actually talk some smack to him about, you know, not only having attended the second most prestigious academic institution in the Bay Area. And,
you know, he's hiding from you.
Anywhere. But we actually have to act,
hiding.
So I can do. Yeah, he's clearly hiding, like always.
Hey, before we move off of Marshawn, what do you think he looks like at this point of his career if he's got a full training camp under his belt, a full season? And we know, you know, listen, he's not the biggest participant in training camp and all of that, but when he's got that full period of time to really prepare for a season versus what he looked like last year, where he was good at getting it across the goal line, but looked a little slower. It's not fair to expect him to be prime Marshawn. What do you think realistically is the version you get with a full season to prepare?
Well, I don't think he has any intention of ever going through a training camp, nor should he. So I don't think you're going to see a guy who, you know, hey man, I've been training months and months for this, but you know, I think he can be better than he was last year coming in cold if he came in, say, on September 1st of this year, assuming we have a normal schedule and all that, and we're playing the opener when we normally play the opener. I think he's a guy who could come in late and you know, be in reasonably good shape and fight his way into a different comfort level, you know, as the games go on. But I don't think he's somebody that you would even want to go through training camp.
Hey, Mike, we're all surprised by Jadeveon Clowney still being unsigned at this point, and we're a good week and a half now into free agency. And what do you think it is? Do you think it's injuries? I know he went into it thinking he was going to get $20 million a year, if not more, but when we talked to John Clayton earlier today, he was thinking it's going to be a one-year contract for $14 million.
I'm sure John has a really good handle on it. So, you know, I think if you're Clowney and you hit a point where if your expectations are not being met, you say, you know what, I'll sign a 1 year somewhere, I'll go tear it up, and then I'll get paid next year. And that's certainly plausible. You know, it's an interesting situation because if you just look at sack numbers, he's not a guy who, you know, despite his pedigree, has put up those numbers, and last year certainly was no exception. On the other hand, in terms of impact, we've seen him just take over games, right? That first game in San Francisco, one of the biggest games of the season in retrospect, he was not only great, he was clearly the best player on the field and, you know, on a field with some pretty great players and just made so many plays and made so many other plays possible. So if you got that guy for 16 games healthy, I think he'd be easily getting $20 million a year. It's a combination of the health issues and then maybe the lack of consistency at times and then the sack numbers being low that I think are all pulling that number down a little bit. But, you know, I did have a long talk with him after that game against the Vikings last year. He told me how much he loved the culture and loved being in Seattle and how he felt like it taught him how to be a professional and in a way that he hadn't been previously. So I believe that all things being equal, he would love to stay with the Seahawks. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, given their cap situation, given his financial parameters, if that could work out again.
All right, Silver, I'm back, and I was screaming into the microphone that the 82 play in the big game was a farce, and I made four tackles on that kickoff return. Apparently none of them counted, but anyway.
You should have made five. Should have made five, my friend.
I was one short.
And by the way, your band members should have form tackled. If somebody in the band had thought to imitate you, then it might have been different.
Oh man, if that had been like the Ohio State band, there'd have been probably five or six guys piling on that guy, you know. So
well Dave, one of my best friends from LA ended up going to Stanford, and we both started in 83, and he told me this great story that I've never seen on video, but I believe to be 100% true, which is that when Stanford played at SC the next year, the SC band for their halftime show did this big, drawn-out, mocking recreation of the play where they were going through it and mocking them, and it got to the point where the fake Cal players were running through the fake Stanford band, and the real Stanford band got so mad that they charged out of the end zone and gang tackled the guy like at the 5-yard line, and actually a fight ensued, which kind of made me love the Stanford band. So I'm assuming that story's true, and good for them for not letting it happen a second time.
Well, I'm pissed at you for telling me that story, because that actually might be the one thing that would make me like the Stanford band.
Because I do not like the Stanford band. Agree.
Yeah, I mean,
it's, you know, you gotta give them respect for that.
Well, continuing on with Clowney, because it's just such a, and I missed part of what you said, but it just, when I'm watching him, Michael, he's not just a pass rusher. I mean, he's such a good player in general. Do you think the injury thing, and then, you know, there's this problem with, you know, having physicals. I understand he's in Houston. So do you think that could be part of it? Because, man, it's amazing how he's lasted this long on this market.
Yeah, I do think anyone with health stuff right now is in a worse position than he normally would be. And that goes for Cam Newton. It went for Gurley in terms of, you know, trade value. He was able to sign, you know, when he was on the street, which is a different issue. But, you know, anyone who you would say, "Guy, I really would like to have our doctors examine him before I know how we value this," is in a bad spot. And, you know, it's all relative. Like, all of us are going through things that are not optimal right now. And, you know, we all have to do our part, and it's bigger than football or anything like that. But it is true that if you are Jadeveon Clowney, you're wishing it was 2019 or hopefully 2021, if all goes well. But 2020 is, you know, a tricky year for that.
Michael Silver is our guest here. You see him on the NFL Network talking football with us right now. And you can follow him on Twitter, at Mike Silver. At Mike Silver is where you can find his work on Twitter. Hey, Mike, of the quarterbacks that are now out there and some that have landed in different spots, obviously Phillip Rivers has a new team. Tom Brady's got a new team. Cam Newton, Jameis Winston will be looking for new teams. Who do you think ends up with the most successful season? Because I feel like Cam Newton and, more importantly, Jameis Winston are going to be battling for spots somewhere, whereas I think it feels like Brady, with the weapons that he's got there in Tampa Bay, is set up for success.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, listen, we've never seen anybody at his age do anything remotely like what he's done. And Breeze is now doing it a couple of years behind, and they are outliers. And maybe this is, you know, a new state of affairs in an era where quarterbacks don't get hit as much and all that. But, man, I mean, until now, most of them have dropped off precipitously by now. So it's hard for me to fathom in any given year that Brady's going to keep being able to do it. But that said, if he can stay at that physical level, then, wow, you got Mike Evans and Godwin. And I had a long talk at the Combine with Bruce Arians at the time, a very hypothetical talk, because, of course, they didn't have him yet. But he and I just sat together for about an hour, and I just said, "Hey, what would it look like?" Everyone says your system, you know, you like 7-step drops, you like them to throw deep, they get hit too much, and what would you do about terminology? I did tweet this kind of in a thread about a week ago, but I'll probably end up writing about it at some point. But, you know, it could be a fascinating football marriage. And, you know, Arians is a guy who came in coaching Peyton Manning, coached Ben Roethlisberger for a long time. So that's two future Hall of Famers that he's done this with. So I feel like he'll figure out a way to give Brady the best chance. A guy I'd keep an eye on who's out there is Andy Dalton, who's still property of the Bengals. I think if his price drops and, you know, in this market, maybe that'll happen, then you would see teams like the Jaguars, where Jay Gruden is, the Patriots, who I think feel like he'd fit their system, and maybe a couple others that we're not talking about as much, try to get value there. And I still think he's a very capable quarterback. And obviously Cam Newton, if he is really Cam Newton and able to do Cam Newton things, he could go somewhere and end up, you know, changing the paradigm a little bit.
Hey, Michael, the Seahawks offensive line, they lost a couple of guys in Fant and Effetti, and then they signed, you know, guys like Chance Warmack. And we were talking about offensive line, and just from your national perspective, is it just here in Seattle that we complain about offensive line, or is that pretty much everywhere? Because I feel like there's always high expectations for that here, and there's lots of complaining about it by one of my co-hosts especially, and so I'm wondering if
they complain in Indy a lot. I know that. No, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. Russell Wilson has taken a lot of hits, and It's not like, oh, our quarterback's taking a lot of hits. We're talking about a future Hall of Fame transcendent quarterback, you know, who you want to preserve, who told me, I think, last offseason he wants to play till he's 45, and you know, that would be amazing for football if he could play a long, long time. So we all agree that we would like to see him protected. You know, the running game has been a big part of, you know, the Seahawks' success under Carroll, and then the revival two seasons ago with Brian Schottenheimer coming in and you know, running jumbo and doing all that. So you know, and we've seen the Tom Cable approach, and now, you know, Mike Solari, who's such a good offensive line coach. So I've kind of been impressed by what they've been able to do. They got great value for Duane Brown, which is super important. You know, they've managed to piece that together pretty well. So this will be another transition. But, you know, honestly, from the time they hit big and became the best team in football and came within a yard of winning back-to-back championships and all that, I've marveled at how many people they've been able to pay, because I know people say, oh, well, they ran out of money for the offensive line, and, you know, and listen, you got to make choices, but I feel like they paid more people over that span big money than conventional wisdom suggested they would have been able to, and most of those were really good decisions at the time, and I think proved to be pretty good decisions. So it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have weaknesses, and you're hoping that you have assistant coaches who can help you coach your way out of it. And the best news is there's a quarterback there who can be transcendent enough to, you know, help cover up those weaknesses. And when you pay a quarterback big salary cap dollars, that's what you really are, you know, that's the only way it really works. Because if you pay a good quarterback that money, because that's where the market is, and he can't overcome those weaknesses, you kind of get stuck in no man's land. Or if you luck into young Russell Wilson on the first, you know, on the cheap deal, then you can do a lot of things. But if you're going to pay someone like the Seahawks have deservedly paid Russell, then you need a guy who is that good, and I think they have one.
Mike, the NFC West, a lot of people thinking it's the toughest division in the NFL right now, and I know we still have the draft coming up, but how do you see it shaking out at this point? Because we know San Francisco going to the Super Bowl last year. Bob and I think the Rams are on the way down. I think Dave feels the same way, and Arizona on the way up, and Seattle winning 11 games last year. How do you see it ending up next year?
I think the division's going to be even better this year. I actually have so much faith in Sean McVay and what they will ultimately do that I think the Rams will compete for the title. I definitely think Arizona got better on paper. You know, the Hopkins trade obviously being a glaring part of that. And the 49ers should be set up for sustained success and look like the class of everything. On the other hand, you know, the Seahawks were, you know, a few inches away from winning the division and changing the whole playoff structure, where San Francisco would have had to come out as a wild card, and, you know, Green Bay would have potentially hosted a conference title game. I mean, the whole thing would have just been completely different, and the margin we're talking about is minuscule in both San Francisco-Seattle games, not to mention the New Orleans 49er game and some others. So, you know, I think the Seahawks have undergone more tumultuous change so far, especially if Cloudy doesn't come back. On the other hand, you know, we're talking about, in my opinion, three of the best coaches in football in McVay, Shanahan, and Carroll. You've got, you know, you've got a quarterback, Jared Goff, who took his team to the Super Bowl, and really, I think it's probably understated how good he's been since McVay got there. You've got a quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo who did a lot of really good things last season, but in the end was getting a lot of, yeah, well, you know, is he good enough? But I think he can ascend. And then you've got a guy in Seattle who is, you know, a future first ballot Hall of Famer who I think will, you know, be better than any of them. So I think the top three are still up for grabs, and I think Arizona is going to be a tougher out than they were previously. It should be fascinating.
Hey, Michael, if you're a Texans fan or you're just watching what they do, is there any way you justify the deal? You brought up Hopkins, and I still haven't heard anybody defend that deal and say, you know what you're missing about that is this, because it looks like they got fleeced on that one. Jadeveon Clowney comes here. They pick up the majority of his salary. That looked to be a bad deal for them. Dwayne Brown left there. I mean, it just doesn't seem like they're very good at making these deals. And O'Brien, I'm not sure what the plan is there, but what is your take on how the Texans handle their business?
Well, for a coach who won a playoff game last year, Bill O'Brien is under an immense amount of pressure. And the natives are definitely, the locals are definitely not happy about it. You know, you'd think that he cheated to win a World Series or something. That's the other issue. But, you know, he's done a really good job of coaching, even when he didn't have, you know, players that, this, you know, you would think would be good enough to form a playoff team, even when he had glaring deficiencies like the offensive line and the secondary. And he had two GMs that he didn't mesh with, and now is his own GM. So certainly Bill O'Brien, the GM, is under pressure. And I don't know that we're in a situation where, you know, like with Mike Holmgren in Seattle, where you could say, well, Mike Holmgren, turns out we don't like you as the GM team president, but we're just going to keep you as coach, and he'll stay, and it'll all work out. I think in this case, it would probably just implode if it implodes. But, you know, the Tunsil trade, they gave up a lot to fill a need. Post Dwayne Brown, you know, you mentioned the Clowney deal. It looked like they didn't get a ton. And then the Hopkins deal, it, you know, has people shaking their heads. So I think if you're Bill O'Brien, you're hoping that the draft goes really well, that you get a receiver in that draft who turns out to be an instant playmaker. And then you're really hoping David Johnson revives his career and looks like a premier runner, because I think anything short of that, you know, it's just going to be obvious fodder for your critics. And on the other hand, they too have a quarterback in Deshaun Watson, an ascending quarterback who I think is capable of covering up a lot of weaknesses, and maybe that will just happen. And if you win games, all of a sudden, a lot of that goes away.
Mike Silver of the NFL Network has been our guest here again. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Silver. At Mike Silver is where you find him on Twitter. Mike, thanks so much for taking time with us. Appreciate it very much. Stay safe out there, and hopefully we get a chance to talk again when there's actual football being played.
Yeah, right back at you. Thanks a lot for having me, and I appreciate you.
There you go. Mike Silver, great job by him. Does a really good job keeping everybody up to speed on what's happening in the NFL. Meanwhile, the NFL draft is going to take place as scheduled, certainly for now, and NFL GMs are not that happy about it. We'll talk about that more next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free. It's convenient. It's there right now when you need it most and you can't be in front of the radio the way you normally would be. Just download the app. You've got access to everything. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to debut a new segment. and Jim's going to be in control of the whole thing. It's going to be really, really cool. Meanwhile, are you ready for that, by the way, Jim?
Yeah, I'm gearing up for it, Bob.
Okay, cool. Meanwhile, we talked about this. I asked you guys this question quickly before the break, and that is the NFL draft is going to take place as scheduled right now. NFL GMs, some of them voted, not very happy about it. Cut number three, Adam Schefter talking about the GM's dissatisfaction with moving forward with the draft.
It's interesting, Greeny, because right now the NFL seems intent upon having the draft in April exactly on the dates it is scheduled to have them, just not in Las Vegas. The general managers are not happy because essentially as of today, Roger Goodell has ordered that all team facilities shut down until at least April 8th. So where are they going to be conducting the draft? Some teams, like the teams in California, like the teams in New Jersey, Philadelphia, maybe they're not even allowed inside their building by the time the draft rolls around, whereas other teams might be allowed. So that would be an advantage for those teams. I had one team suggest to me yesterday that we could wind up renting a hotel room, a conference room in a hotel, so that we could have our war room there because we're not allowed in our facilities. There's lots of unknowns here about how this is going to work. The one thing we can say is the GMs don't want to have the draft when it is. They want it pushed back. The NFL wants the draft on the dates it has it and hasn't discussed moving it back at this point in time.
And one more cut before we get your guys' thoughts on this. Cut number five, just a GM perspective, Saints GM Mickey Loomis talking to Peter King on his podcast about his feelings here.
I'd be personally in favor of delaying the draft so that we can get some of the work done that our scouts and our personnel people ordinarily do. And then just the logistics of trying to conduct the draft with you're not having access to your draft rooms and your offices, you know, creates a lot of logistic problems. This is not a fantasy draft that you conduct out there with just a list of things on a piece of paper.
Jim, let's start with you because I didn't give you a chance to answer before the break but do you feel like this is something that should be pushed back, or do you feel like, all right, yeah, it's going to be an inconvenience, but the world is finding a way to function around this virus and function around the restrictions that it presents, whether you're talking about everybody getting on a video stream together and communicating through video on iPads and things like that, what have you? Or do you feel like, you know what, let's just table this until this subsides a little bit and they can all do it the way they've become accustomed to doing the draft?
Well, I was surprised when they went ahead with the free agency. The NFL was the only league that just conducted business as usual, and I understand some reasons why, but I just thought the perception of it might have been better if they had postponed it a week or two at least. And I just, if you either need to have all the team facilities open or all of them closed so you have a level playing field when it comes to that with the war rooms and the GMs and everything else. But as far as, you know, not being able to see guys at pro days and everything else, I think they're all working from the same level as far as trying to figure out which guys they want to draft, looking at the tape and the film and everything they have on these guys that they're wanting to draft. But I can see both sides of it. You know, the one thing I do like more than anything else is Adam Schefter suggesting today that they make it a 7-night draft and having one round a day rather than having the 3-day draft as it is right now. I think it'd be kind of cool if they spaced it out and just have one round a day.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think that part would be good for the entertainment part of it for us. Yeah, I mean, that would be cool. I don't know if maybe it would give them a few extra days anyway, but man, this is interesting that, you know, that Goodell is just kind of glossing over. The vote was, I think, 6-1. They have some management council of GMs, which I think Schneider might be on. I might be wrong about that. But, you know, it's obviously like Mickey Loomis said, who, by the way, Mickey used to be here. He's actually the guy that used to hand out checks here. And, you know, what he was saying is this is not some fantasy draft. It's important. I mean, these are big decisions you're making. You're paying these guys a lot of money. And, you know, if there's some kind of a problem with health or whatever, yeah, I can totally see why these guys want to push this back and try to get to a point where we're not talking about, like, somebody texted in about you know, you guys crack me up. You want to play basketball now? No, not talking about now. It's just talking about when you get to a point where you sort of flatten that curve with this whole thing, and then, you know, find out a little bit more about it, you know, and having players, you know, have a team play, you know, sometime in the near future when it's on the downward trend without big crowds, you know, that might work out. And so I think the Seahawks are hoping, I mean, the NFL is that they're going to be able to flatten this curve enough to where they can actually take a look at these guys. Because, you know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, like Tom Brady, he got his physical done because he happened to be in New York and everything. But, you know, for these kids that are all over the country, that's a, you know, you put a second round bid on a guy, or, you know, first round, my gosh, you're not sure exactly what you're getting. And you don't know if the guy could have fallen off his bike or, you know, blown out a knee playing pickup basketball going into the draft.
Don't you feel like that's something they could?
Hey, Bob,
I feel like there are contingencies they could put in place, right? If you can't conduct the physical, you watch the game tape, you can conduct interviews with them. Maybe you're not, you've got combine video to watch. They've had these conversations there. So that homework's been done. I mean, yeah, maybe something's happened between the combine and where we're at now, but it feels like that's a fairly easy remedy, and maybe I'm being too simple about it, but it feels like they could write in a contingency that, hey, if we discover that you suffered an injury in the meantime, this is null and void, depending on the severity, something along those lines. It just feels like there is a workaround if they really want it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, maybe you could do like a video type of deal or whatever, but I mean, if you put a pick in, then do you lose your pick? You know, if you find out later, if there's some contingency in there, then what does that mean? I mean, you just don't get that pick, or you don't have to pick him, but you still lose your, you know, your selection. So, yeah, I agree, though. I think there might be some way to kind of work around that, because like I said, Brady, he ended up getting his physical done.
Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just got a sports alert from the Seattle Times that Governor Jay Inslee has signed into law a bill authorizing sports betting within tribal casinos, and Washington becomes the 19th state where some sports betting is either taking place or awaiting launch.
Okay. All right. Well, great news.
Well, I thought that was a big deal. It was a big deal, and I wanted to bring it up.
I thought you were going
to
throw something. I thought you were going to throw something in that had to do with what we were talking about. But that, congratulations. That's cool. That's
no,
good
news. I suck at transition sometimes, Bob. I mean, come on.
All right. Let's transition into this. We're going to try a new segment. It's called Change My Mind, and Jim's got a hard stance. We're going to see if we can change his mind, and we'll let you guys text in as well, 710-710, if you can provide a legitimate argument that should sway Jim off of the hill he is prepared to die on. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the way it is. Go ahead. Change my mind.
Brand new segment making its debut here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Change my mind. One of us at any given time may take a hard line position on something, and it's up to us, the other two, to talk that person out of it, make a reasonable case against it. And also the texters, the listeners, you can text in. 710-710 is the text line for you if you want to argue with Jim today. Jim is the one who's taking a hardline position on something. Jim, go ahead. What is it? What hill are you ready to die on right now?
Well, I'm ready to die on this hill with just about everybody else, and I don't think anybody's going to be texting in because most people are going to agree with me once I get done here. You know what I'm sick of hearing, Bob and Dave? And we get this from the professor all the time, and I love John, so don't mistake that at all. But this business about Clowney will only go to a 4-3 team, or a team that plays a 4-3 defense. You know how many times I've heard that? Probably about 150. And I'm sick of hearing it. Like, Jadeveon Clowney's going to sit there and go, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to sign with you because you're a 3-4 defense. That's not going to happen. And I just don't get it. One thing, he's going to go to where the money is. And the other thing, when he was in Houston, now correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be on this one, but I think the Texans have a 3-4 defense. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Dave.
Okay. All right. So when he was playing in that 3-4 defense, he had better numbers than he had in Seattle playing in a 4-3 defense. Now, I know what somebody's going to be listening and saying, well, wait a minute. He had J.J. Watt down there, and that's why he had more success in Houston numbers-wise with the sacks. He had nine sacks in 2018, 9.5 sacks in 2017. And in 2018, J.J. Watt played 16 games, so it stands to reason, well, okay, they couldn't double-team him there in Houston because they had to deal with J.J. Watt, too. Well, guess what? In 2017, J.J. Watt played 5 games, and Clowney had a career-high 9.5 sacks that year. So I'm just looking at this going, enough already with the 4-3 defense, 3-4 defense. Clowney's not going to sign with a 3-4 defense. That's the hill I'm here to die on. I'm going to try and make this segment work, by God. And I don't think anybody can talk me out of that one. How's that?
What do you think, Dave?
Well, for what amount of money? I mean, I think he said he prefers to play in a 4-3. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about $20 million to play in a 3-4 versus, you know, 13 or 14 in a 4-3, no, he's going to go to the 3-4 team. I mean, it's not that big of a difference. But, I mean, if they're even or they're within, I don't know what his range is, what is his tolerance for, you know, I think more than anything, he wants to go to a team that has a chance to win. So, yeah, I just think you're going to probably hear that, but it probably gets oversaid, you know, to Jim's testament there that, you know, I feel like you're not going to change your mind, though, based on the amount of derision that I hear in your voice when you say 3-4 versus 4-3. But don't you think that there's a price in there somewhere? It's part of it, you know? It's like, okay, where do you want to live? First of all, it's like money. And then next, it's probably pretty close, is I want to be on a winning team. Then there's probably all these other things in there, like, where do I want to live? Is this a great city? Is it a nice franchise? Is the owner a punk like Daniel Snyder, or the guy in Houston who you already don't like? And, you know, those all those things kind of come in there. But I don't know how high on the list the 3-4 versus 4-3 thing is, but I think it's certainly a factor of dollars. So, but if they're all the same, he wants to play in a 4-3 rather than a 3-4.
Yeah, and Dave, that's basically what I was going to say. If he's being offered in the same neighborhood, here's a 4-3 team versus a 3-4 team, and they're within $1 million, maybe even $2 million each, I think he's going to go to a 4-3A, because I think if he's thinking of another contract past this initial one, he gets more money as a defensive end than he does as an outside linebacker, too.
Right.
He's going to look at the winning situation that you talked about. Which one's got a better chance of winning? Where do I want to live more? All of those other things come into play, maybe even state income tax, things like that. But I think if we're just talking about money and we're saying in Jim's cases, he's being motivated by money. All right, well, where does he have a chance to make the most money if they're close? Now, if somebody blows him out of the water and says, hey, we're a 3-4, but we're going to offer you $20 million a year and Seattle's offering you $13 million, that's a no-brainer. But if they're close, and it's a 3-4 versus a 4-3, and he's thinking, I've got another contract in me, I'm going to get paid more as a defensive end than as an outside linebacker.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm just looking at the over the cap, where they've got all the cap space for the different teams, and I'm not sure what, Dave, you probably know this, what Cleveland's defense is, but they've got $47 million of caps, or $47 million in cap space. And so you just look at something like that and you think, well, okay, Clowney's not going to turn them down if they come in there with an $18 to $20 million offer if they have a 3-4 defense. And the Seahawks, I'm looking at them, they're 18th in cap space right now with $15.5 million. And I know they can fix that by restructuring some contracts and releasing other guys, and they can get Clowney in the fold here. But still, there's a bunch of teams ahead of them that have more money to work with right now.
Yeah, Cleveland's
a 4-3. We didn't talk you out of it, Jim.
Well, no. The point of the segment is not to get talked out of it, isn't it?
Well, no, you could come to a different conclusion. Oh. We make our case. The listeners can make their case. And maybe you go, you know what? I didn't consider that. Or you say, you know what? Hey, good point. I still believe that he's just as good in the 3-4, and he'd be just as willing to play in a 3-4 as he would be in a 4-3.
Yeah, but anyone who's willing to die on a hill for something, they're not willing to listen to anybody, even if they have rational explanations.
Okay.
Yeah, so but maybe you find a different hill. You search for a different hill to die on, Jim. How do you want to die?
I don't know, but when I do, spread my ashes over Martin Stadium, okay? I don't see a bunch of texters writing in going, yeah, Jim's wrong. It's usually Jim's right.
I saw one that said, it's not so much I agree or disagree, you're wrong, they said, but...
This one from the 253 says, this segment sucks.
Well, we might agree on that one, 253.
Well, we'll see how it goes. We'll see which kind of hills are being picked to die on moving forward.
Hey, I gave it my best shot, 253, okay?
You did.
Hey, look, it's 54-50, Jim.
There we go. I told you I could do it, Dave.
Perfect. All right. Coming up, we're gonna talk some more football. The professor John Clayton will join us next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
We do know a lot of stuff, and we try to learn every single day, teach every single day, right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. What did we learn today, Brian?
You know, today... Very interestingly, we learned that Jim's technology issues may not be all his fault.
Doing great. I can hear the static in the background, which means Jim's here. Hi, Jim.
Hey, guys. Apparently, I'm getting a new computer tomorrow, and I just want you to know that it's not operator error on my end. It's a computer error because it's an older computer as opposed to the older operator who usually takes the blame in these cyber situations, but for a change, apparently it's the equipment that I'm working with, and I know, you know, like a good worker shouldn't blame his equipment, but I'm going to do it anyway.
You know, Jim, I don't think any of us were blaming you for the static. I think we assumed it was your internet connection, but good to know you're getting a new computer.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes tomorrow. It should be better, so it should the quality should be better, and hopefully the delay will be better, and maybe even the inside will be better. But
yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves, huh?
That might be asking a lot, Jim.
Yeah,
I know.
All right, one thing at a time, baby steps. We'll work with the computer, and then we'll see what we can do with you after that. But and by the way, I noticed on the text line, Jim being a victim again. Just, why are you so mean to Jim? Ugh. Nobody pays attention to
what
Jim says to other people. Oh, stop it. It's so sad how people just fall into this trap of Jim being victimized, and he doesn't ever deserve a harsh word or a cutting comment. He never dishes it out. I hope people start paying attention to what you say.
I agree with all those people that are listening and texting in, so thank you for that.
I like how somebody says, Dave? Thanks, genius. And Jim says, you're welcome. Or maybe that was you.
No, I didn't do that.
That was me.
I like that review. I like that response, Bob.
What else did we learn, Brian?
Well, Michael Silver had a really good theory about why Dave dropped during his interview.
Right. I thought Dave was back. Apparently, he's still not back.
I think Wyman is boycotting me because of my alma mater, which is, you know, that's fine because for the first time in a long time, I could actually talk some smack to him about, you know, not only having attended the second most prestigious academic institution in the Bay Area. And,
you know, he's hiding from you.
Anywhere. But we actually have the act,
hiding.
So I can do. Yeah, he's clearly hiding, like always.
Dave, you weren't hiding, were you?
Silver, he's a goofy dude. I love him.
the real shot there great. That I didn't notice until listening to it that time around is when he added the "as always" right there at the end. Dave hiding as always.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you guys remember after the fail Mary catch, he was down on the field and there's like a video of him trying to talk to Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know if you guys remember that, because they would always show Aaron Rodgers storming off the field and Silver's there like talking to him and he's got his little notepad out and everything. And yeah, because they both went to Cal.
Ah. Well, apparently yeah, that connection didn't help him in that situation.
He's got close relationships with Aaron Rodgers and... And Richard. Never mind.
What else did we learn, Brian?
You know, that actually does it for today. That's all we learned today.
You know what I was going to say about this delay does for you? You know, there's like 50% of the time I think that the delay is because I just said something really stupid or not funny. And it's not that, you know, that there's a delay. It's that that was really dumb what you just said there, and nobody's going to respond to it. Do you guys get that?
Yeah. Every once in a while, just, you know, something falls on deaf ears.
Yeah.
I will say, we didn't have another cut to learn, but for anybody that didn't hear our interview with Austin Nola earlier in this show, that was an awesome interview, one of my personal favorites since I've been working here.
Oh, well, thank you, Brian. Yeah, that was fun talking to him. And you guys can find that, by the way. Austin Nola, John Clayton, Michael Silver, all guests of the program today. So any of that you missed will be sitting right there on the podcast page waiting for you. Just go to 710sports.com and click that podcast button and click on our picture. That's going to do it for us today. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.